I thought this was one of your sound effects with Crackpot calling the kettle black.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
It's November 15, 2009. Time for your Gitmo Nation Media Assassination, episode 148.
This is No Agenda.
With news on the Kim Jong-il drinking club and coming to you from the La Quinta Crackpot Command Center in upstate New York, Gitmo Nation East, I'm Adam Curry.
And from a sunny, the sun just came up as a matter of fact, Northern Silicon Valley, I'm John C. Dvorak.
It's Crackpot and Buzzkill
in the morning.
Yeah, really in the morning.
Yeah.
Early.
Too much in the morning.
I appreciate it, John. You know, that really does show some love for the show.
Yeah.
And you're up, what is it now, a quarter to eight?
I got up at seven.
Well, it is the Church of No Agenda.
Yeah, and we're having early service.
Early service on the Church of No Agenda. So I'm at the lovely La Quinta. What is it officially? Inns and Suites.
Oh yeah, those are nice.
No, they're not.
They're fine.
No, it's not.
There goes our free. There goes the free room.
There's no free room either. I love it when you want to go have breakfast. And of course, they're having a great breakfast up at the house. But you know, it's like I can't have a breakfast up at the house because I got to do my damn show. And
Just a starch breakfast that they serve at these hotels.
Dude, it's amazing. They have a waffle iron and a big ton of waffle goop that you pour into a paper cup.
Oh, you make your own waffles?
Yeah.
Oh, that's kind of funny.
It's cute. And you pour your goop in there and you flip it over and a timer starts automatically. And boy, I'm still feeling the waffle.
You'll be tasting it all day.
It feels outstanding.
Today's executive producer, by the way, is Stephen Scheer.
Okay.
Of all people, and I say that because he and the boys at MWG, one of the arms companies in Miami that makes the 90 rounder for the M16.
Wait a minute. We are now part of the military industrial complex, John.
Well, at least in so far as fandom is concerned.
Okay, well, excellent. So, of course, you know the deal. If you want to be executive producer of one of our shows, all you have to do is come in with the highest donation for that particular episode. How much did we receive from the boys?
Well, he got in under the wire because it was only $90. That was our highest number this week.
That's it?
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. And
Stephen Sheeran, he can also put it in his resume, and of course, we do appreciate the boys at MWG for being creative.
Yeah, so you can put
a 90 rounder.
A 90 rounder. What is that? That's a clip or a magazine?
Yeah, I guess it's a magazine.
A magazine. So we really appreciate the donation, and you can put that on your resume now as the executive producer of No Agenda, episode 148. We will vouch for you, so feel free to use that, and it could get you gigs. It could actually get you a job.
Yeah, if you don't want to shoot your way into a job. Yeah.
So do they make the magazine or the actual ammunition magazine?
They make the... What's the difference?
Well, there's a magazine where you put ammunition into, and there's a magazine that you read. Which one do they make?
It's good. They make the one you put ammunition into.
Awesome.
The one you read. And it's called the 90 rounder.
The 90 rounder.
Yeah, right. $5 a month. Yeah, right. So, just saves our price.
So if you're looking for a great deal on a 90 rounder, if you want to shoot your way to freedom, check out the boys down at, what was it called?
MWG.
MWG.
I'm sure most gun enthusiasts know about these guys.
So I'm in upstate New York, in Armonk, near the lovely headquarters of the International Business Machines Incorporated.
Yeah, and you know why they moved to Armonk, right?
No, I have no idea. Cheap real estate?
I don't know if it's that cheap. It's kind of a ritzy area.
It's very ritzy. It's incredibly expensive up here.
They did a report, a study, I believe it was in the 50s or early 60s, discussing what would they do in so far as business is concerned, if Manhattan, where they were headquartered, I believe, at the time, or around there, was nuked.
Really?
Yeah. And so they decided that Armonk was the safest place.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that's why they're there.
Yeah. Oh, and do you think if a nuke dropped on Manhattan that Armonk actually would be safe?
Well, I'm sure it wouldn't be after the hordes of
survivors.
Survivors came pouring in there shooting it up. Probably not, but that's what the report indicates.
So I'm really hoping this connection stays alive, John. You are kind of you're not downloading porn or anything, are you? Just make
sure.
No,
it's already breaking up already.
Mm. Well, a little bit. It's pretty clean, but just from time to time, it's stuttering a bit.
Yeah, it's getting worse. We're gonna have to move to Gizmo.
No, I don't think so.
You watch.
So, of course, I'm up here for a big family gathering. It's my dad's 70th birthday. And this, of course, is at the family homestead, better known as the South Fork of the Curry clan.
Coincidentally located in Armonk.
Yes. Hmm. That's a very interesting thought.
I think not.
No, we know how safe it is. And, of course, this is where my Uncle Don lives with his lovely wife, Aunt Meg. And as God is my witness, John, I popped the question on him last night.
Oh, okay.
I said,
and he laughed, right? Did he laugh out loud?
Let me, and Mickey was there. She can attest to it. I said, Uncle Don, I would be remiss if I did not ask you straight to your face. We know about Kim Jong-il, and we know about his fabulous wine collection, and my partner, John C. Dvorak, and I think that the guy probably just wants to have a good tasting with someone who just won't give him any crap and will just talk about the wine. And then the laughter came. And
expected.
And he said, well, you know, unfortunately, I have not met the supreme leader of Northern Korea. However, he says, I have had some correspondence with him. He sent some letters. And even better, he sent him some movies for Kim Jong-il to watch. He sent him, he gave me a list, including The Patriot and Brothers in Arms and Whisperers, you know, the Indian decoders. And, the word came back that Kim Jong-il enjoyed them very, very much.
Huh.
And so I'm starting to make my own list of movies we can recommend and we can send to Kim Jong-il in hopes, of course, that we'll get a fine wine tasting someday in the future. I'm thinking we send him Team America. You have any thoughts?
There's this wine movie that I haven't seen myself that's floating around everyone just talks about.
Well,
mostly about Bordeaux wine.
Well, why don't we have our producers put together a list of cool movies, and then I'll go out and I'll buy the DVDs. We'll probably have to get him on VHS. I don't know if he has a DVD player.
Oh, he has to, please.
Well, what region code does he need to use?
We have to find
we have to have the right region.
No, no, you know what? There's no doubt he's got a zero code.
You think?
Yeah, it's got no,
no restrictions. He can play whatever he wants. You sure now?
I would be stunned if he didn't. Come on.
I think we should put together a list of cool movies for King Jong-il to watch. You know, we can actually get them to him. We've got a direct line.
That's a good point. Then we could put in subtle hints about the wine tasting.
Exactly.
Can you imagine the grief I'd have to go through with the State Department if we ever pull this off?
No, we're going to pull it off. I'm telling you, we can get these videos to them. There's been like two shipments so far. So there could be a third. The trifecta. We're in. Come on. The door is open. There's a crack. We can get in, John. I'm telling you.
Well, that's progress. Thank you very much.
Yeah. So it's not like I'm not trying to hook a brother up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it works for me. So, okay,
We're gonna track it.
But I think people out there should give us a list of what they think Kim Jong-il would be interested in as a good movie.
Yeah, because you know, maybe we can influence the guy a little bit. And again, the entire mission is not to save the world. We just want to get John out there to have a nice drink with the guy.
Yeah.
Right.
And then I can come back and tell you what I thought.
Okay. For those of you who are wondering what this program is all about, here's our formula.
Our formula is this. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
And sometimes we send them DVDs.
So we should probably do a just a short swine flu minute.
Oh, my goodness. Is it? Okay. I wasn't really prepared for it, John, but if you say
it's
so.
It's the No Agenda Swine Flu Minute.
Oh, boy. It's early in the show. Let's hit it.
So I go over to the library yesterday to drop off some books in Albany. And I'm coming down the road. And I go to turn into the parking lot, and there's a cop there. Oh, you can't come in here. Oh, great. And so I move up further. And there's all there's a horde of moms and dads and their two kids, and they're walking. And I said, oh, there must be some party or something going on.
There must be a book signing or some rock star, or maybe Taylor Swift is in town.
So I go around, drive around the corner of the front. There is a line, I swear to God, it was a mile and a half long. And there's big signage that's all been printed up officially. H1N1 vaccinations. And they had a bunch of people wearing these yellow, looked like, you know, there were these bright yellow outfits with clipboards. And they're going from person to person to person to person, asking them, you know, what they, you know, about them, whether they are eligible for this round of shots. Mm-hmm. Oh, and by the way, I find it interesting that, because I was watching a lot of UK coverage, mm-hmm. the UK calls them jabs.
Yes, they do.
And we call them shots, and we're the ones who are really like guns. They don't. They like to fight.
Yes, well, actually, it's interesting. They like to fight with knives over in the UK. That's a very good point. So we kind of have the gun metaphor.
Yeah,
and the UK they use the
knife and fisticuffs metaphor.
I like that.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm going there, and they're asking people questions. They fill out a form, ask your age, and it was mostly kids. I'm telling you, it was mostly families. It was mom and dad, or mom in a stroller, or pregnant mom in a stroller, or pregnant mom and a dad in a stroller, and a kid.
Yeah.
And there's just, I'm telling you, this line was so long, I couldn't even find the end of it, because I was like, screw it, I'm not going to walk this line.
Was this like at a shopping mall, or what exactly was
it?
No,
it was at the community center.
Okay.
Which is attached to the Albany Library.
Okay, gotcha.
It was unbelievable, and it was not what I call a swiftly moving line. Mm-hmm. And I ran into somebody shortly thereafter who said that the wait was 3 hours.
Now, were they doing the nasal mist with the actual live virus, or were they using the attenuated version?
As far as I know, they were doing the shot.
The shot, okay.
But they may have had mist there for the kids. I have no idea. I didn't get into the place. But the questionnaire, so they make him fill out, well, you get to take a shot and you don't. It was like, you know, it was almost Sophie's Choice kind of thing.
What was the criteria, I wonder, whether you get the shot or not?
Well, I think it varies. I mean, they talk about it on the news a lot. You know, are you in the group? Are you old or young? Are you too, you know, it's just, I don't know. And they tear off a little kind of a chit. That allows them to get the shot, and they give, like, they tear one off for the kid, and then they tear one off for the mom that's pregnant, and then the old man
You know what? They should be scalping these things. This is a great aftermarket, John. We need to be getting these chits or whatever you call them, and we need to be scalping these on the corner. This is good.
Well, that makes you wonder, with the kind of demand there is, that why isn't the government, like, you know, which is paying for most of this stuff, as far as I can tell, I don't know that this would cost anything, start, you know, you got the entire public in a panic, nick them $100 a pop.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, we already set aside $10 billion for the entire program, which, of course, each shot has an excise tax of, like $1.50. Which is hidden. So, yeah, why not take a little bit more money? That's perfect.
Yeah, I mean, it was unbelievable. And this line was, because everyone's socializing. Well, you know, we're getting in line. I think we're going to get ours. I think they're going to run out. And I don't know. It just was like, wow.
You should have stood in line and said, I'm pregnant. Can't you tell? Please, let me in. I need to have the shot.
We had been there 3 hours just to do the one gag. I don't think it's worth it.
It's outrageous. Meanwhile, in Wheeling, West Virginia, There was a kid who was, I guess it was at school in the auditorium. You know, they're setting up these big gymnasium shot sessions for students. And this kid ran out because he didn't want to, whether he was afraid of a shot or the shot. You know, he like ran away, and then the sheriff's deputies like coaxed him back into the gymnasium, and they grabbed him and held him down while they gave him the shot. I mean, this is, you think this is going a little bit too far, perhaps? Oh my goodness!
A couple of weeks ago, one of our producers sent me a story, and it was again from some podunk area in the middle of like in the Carolinas or someplace, and about some people that got sick over these shots. And I think these reports are starting to come in here and there around the. They're actually probably around the world, but they're completely being completely ignored.
Of course, not. Well, how about not just ignored, John? How about suppressed? Would that be a word for you?
This being completely suppressed.
Thank you.
Or ignored.
Yeah, there seems to be some people getting sick. There's have been reports of people with neurological disorders after the shot, which of course is to be expected with any vaccine, is what the report will say. But of course, it's totally safe. You don't have to worry.
Anyway, so I was distressed to see all these people lined up like sheep.
We could close.
Here's the joke of it. Before we close the minute, it's like this flu is mild. It hasn't caused nearly the death toll seasonal flu has. But nobody ever lines up like this for the seasonal flu.
No, and it hasn't even.
This shows you what the power of the media and the government is when they want to push an agenda. It's amazing how they can get results. It's just a matter of pushing people around and tricking them and scaring them. Ooh, scared.
Well, what people fail to understand is that, and it's not even like the government or whoever is really pushing the swine flu agenda, which I believe is pretty much big pharma and the government colluding. But they don't even have
and
to.
Big media.
Yeah, well, big media. They don't even have to collude with big media because all big media is interested in is ratings. That's all that counts. And the way to get ratings is to scare people. You know, Balloon Boy works. Okay, what can we do now? Oh, wait a minute. There's not enough of the vaccine. I mean, it's simple. You just play into the fears of everyone who's watched any science fiction movie or Outbreak with Dustin Hoffman. And they even call it Outbreak consistently instead of Pandemic. We've gone from Pandemic to Outbreak. Outbreak. And meanwhile, the French are starting to, it's no wonder those guys, I think you even wrote an email to someone and said this, John. No wonder the French don't donate to the show. They're way too smart.
No, they're all this stuff is old news.
Yeah.
To them. Our show is like, you
know. Like, oh, yeah, whatever. Whatever.
Whatever.
Whatever. Ah, these two crackpot and buzz killed. They have nothing new for me.
The French have already debunked. Basically, they're on the same page we are. 70% of the French say they're not going to take the shot under any circumstances. They say the public is saying when they're polled that, as far as they're concerned, the flu vaccine is experimental. The flu's not that bad. All the stuff we've been saying, apparently the mainstream media in France, which is kind of a communist-dominated media, they've been saying the same thing and pointing the finger at Big Pharma for turning this into like essentially a scam.
I was even reading a report here from Oulala.net.
Oulala.net.
Yeah, these guys are great. They're claiming something very interesting, that they say that the actual vaccine, of course, every vaccine contains a part of the virus that it's supposed to combat. They're saying that it actually contains a mixture of H1N1 and H5N1, which would be the bird flu. And that, of course, could be a very lethal combination.
Yeah, they make this claim in France. This has cropped up a couple of times that they believe or somebody's saying, which is not beyond the realm of possibility because we already know that Baxter had distributed and admitted to distributing a vaccine with H5N1 in it.
It's exactly and this happened in six countries in Europe. They distributed this. They had 75 pounds of the stuff that they had mixed up. And luckily some guy in, where was he, John? Czech Republic, I think?
Can't remember.
He checked it on some ferrets, which is kind of procedure, and they all died. And that's not what's supposed to happen. It's like, you know, the ferret ain't supposed to die when he gets his flu shot.
So the thinking is that if you wanted to be conspiratorial, is that, well, you want to mix these together in case so you can get somebody to live through the process and actually recombine, because most of these sorts of viruses are always mating with each and then saying, well, why don't you take my N1 and I'll give you my H5 and then we'll see what happens. And to create a real pandemic where, so these drug companies can make some serious money.
Yeah, that's why they're all holding back on making this, because you know they're waiting for the mutation. They're waiting for the
mutation.
Yeah, I guess it is the mutation. They're waiting for that, and then they'll really go into full speed production. Or it's still the adjuvants, which I still think is they're waiting to make their case to bring in the adjuvants.
No, I think that why do one thing? You know, let's work on a number of projects. As you said, you do have the PowerPoints. One of the drug companies that shows how they're going to, you know, essentially turn vaccines into their new huge profit center.
Well, it's the pipeline. That's what they call it. They call it the pipeline. They're looking at GlaxoSmithKline alone looked at an $18 billion pipeline of vaccines. Vaccines. I love it when you come up with a vaccine against an addiction. So there's going to be a vaccine against nicotine addiction. Which essentially means they're shooting
No sense, by the way, because it's not a vaccine.
Yeah, but I can only imagine how it's going to be marketed, because this is, you know, Americans in particular, being the world's consumer, you know, we're very susceptible to these messages. It's like, well, you know, I've already gotten my kid the HPV vaccine so that she won't contract cervical cancer. By the way, you can just get a regular pap smear and avoid it as well. And, I've given it to my son as well now that the FDA approved it. And now, I don't want my kid to get hooked on cigarettes. Yeah, and you know, let's give my kid the vaccine for that. But what it is, of course, is some kind of neurotransmitter they're shooting into your brain. I mean, right? Suppress
the
whole.
Yeah, that's what it's going to be.
Yeah, and you know, that just can't be good. It doesn't feel right. By the way, my cousin Lucy, I've always, you know, she's always been, I can't even say it because they're all listening, but she's always been one of my favorite cousins. And she lives right in Washington. She lives right next to Peggy, the new boss of the FDA.
Oh,
yeah, you know the woman who used to be a consultant for Burger King.
Right.
And she's got some stories. I got to get the whole list from her, but she was going to start emailing me. I can't. She said, "Don't mention me by name." Okay, I won't. And, you know, her husband is like a multi-billionaire and all kinds of interesting businesses. And it's so clear that the shadow puppet theater is on and in full effect.
Yeah,
and in Ukraine, they now say that it is not H1N1 that is killing people in droves. They have a real pandemic, as the way pandemic used to be defined by the World Health Organization, so widespread and people dying. It is the N1N1.
N1N1,
which is 100% lethal. It's like the Black Plague, essentially.
I never heard of this. In fact, I missed this story.
Yeah, no, I'll put the story in the show notes at noagendashow.com. And, of course, not to forget that Baxter International, the very same people who mixed H1N1 with H5N1 and distributed it to 6 European countries in an actual flu vaccine shot, have a fine R&D lab in Ukraine.
Well, this will be a continuing coverage.
Yes, and we will revisit this every single show.
It's the No Agenda Swine Flu Minute.
Void where prohibited by law.
So what else we got?
You got some clips. Yeah, let's do some clips.
Well, I got one. The complainer is the name of the clip. And this is the kind of person that is probably lurking everywhere around the country. And it's an old woman that's complaining. And they never pick these people up anymore. If you listen to talk radio, you know, especially the big shots, they have screeners that talk to you for a few minutes to see if you're suitable.
Yeah, and put you ahead of the line and put you right on the air, or dump you.
Or dump you because they think you're nuts or whatever, or you're going to say something like, for example, if you ever get in on the Michael Savage show, the screener is freaky about telling you not to say hello or
exactly. And I want to say hi to my family.
Well, no, just you can't even say hi to Michael Savage.
Right.
He finds it annoying that people would waste his time with pleasantries. And so I've heard him hang up on people and say, "Hi, Michael, how you doing?" Click. So anyway, But these screeners, you know, but on C-SPAN, on, in this case, it was the Washington Journal with some Republican
Congress. Is this the show where they have the Democratic line, the Republican line, and then the independent line?
Yeah.
Well, they have
that on a lot of their shows.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that.
But this is a woman who called in, and I don't know what line she was on because I missed that part of it, but she was obviously the independent line if you listen to this. And she just has a kind of an interesting complaint as to, meant that I just found was amusing, especially the response to it.
Okay.
Good morning, Steve. I can't hardly hear you, but...
Well, we can hear you, so please go ahead, Maria.
Okay.
Okay, that was 3 seconds wasted.
All right, I'll go ahead. I'm 86 years old, and I sat by all these months listening to what's going on in Washington, and I got news for you. The Democrats have sold their soul to hell.
What did she say?
The Democrats have sold their soul to hell.
Oh, okay.
Their soul to hell. That's where what's the matter. And the Republicans are standing by trying to let them get away with everything they've come out and lied about. And I'm also can see a lot of the future. I'm 86 years old. I'm Indian. I know you're not interested in what I got to say, but America, wake up, because we are being took by a bunch of sorry low-life cockroaches. That's what we're being took by. God bless America and God damn the Washington.
I love it. She can replace you on the show. She's outstanding. Does it go on? Did they respond?
Yeah, they respond. The response is hilarious.
Okay.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you, Mary. And I think we're all interested in what she has to say.
There's smoke coming out of their ears right now.
To her one point, really though, that the Republicans aren't, I forget how she put it, pushing back to what the Democrats are doing. Certainly in the House, we're trying to push back as much as we possibly can. As Mary probably knows, the Republicans are in the minority, so it just makes it hard on any one of these votes. It comes along party line votes. They have the votes to vote yes, we vote no. We offer our solutions, but we're not given a chance to hear them.
That's not what she's saying at all.
No,
she's saying,
that's not what she's saying.
We're all being cooked by the cockroaches in Washington. She's outstanding, and you know what? And I love how she goes, "Wake up, America! We gotta pull that." Let me see if I can find that again.
So can see a lot of the future. I'm 86 years old.
Here it comes.
I love her. I know you're not interested in what I got to say, but America, wake up!
Exactly. Fabulous. I do love watching. It's on in the morning, right? That show?
I don't know when it's on. I mean, I just, you know, I'm like you. I turn on C-SPAN and, you know, it's almost, you know, it's the two channels. And then you go back and forth and back and forth. If there's nothing, then you go to watch something else and then you go back to it. I don't know. I think it's a weekend show. I'm not sure.
On the morning show, they do that. And then they take these questions. And they're screeners. Yeah, they got like interns. Who are probably sitting there like, dude, watch me put this one on the air. This is cool. Watch this.
America, wake up.
If only they would put people like that on the air all the time. That's actually entertaining.
Yeah, it is entertaining, and it's more accurate than these other guys who are just, you know, the ones that are interesting. I mean, if you listen to the right-wing talkers, they love putting the people on that just compliment them to excess. You know, Rush, I've been listening to your show since the late 80s, and you're a true patriot. You're like saving the country for all of us. You're the best.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, let this guy go. Go on, say more.
Yes, please, say more. Say more for Rushbo. Here you go. Thank you. Rushbo loves you.
So, and Savage is another one. He doesn't like the pleasantries, but man, if somebody comes on, you know, especially a woman comes on, start to compliment him, they go on for hours, and she never cuts them off.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I'm so happy. I'm on the road. I've been on the road for a week. I have absolutely not seen. No, I take that back. I saw television. It was crazy in the breakfast room, the breakfast area at La Quinta Inn and Suites. It's a breakfast area. It's like almost like, you know, the weighing station for trucks. It's the breakfast area over here. And they had one TV on in the left corner and caddy corner diagonal across the area. They had another TV on. One was blaring CNN. The other one was blaring Fox. It was like, and I sat in the middle going like, hey, and my art, you know, blood trickling out of my ears. And on Fox, there was a guy there with his kid. And we were the only, so like four, we were the only four people in the room. And on Fox, it's like, they found 24 gallons of water on the moon. And, yeah. And this guy, bless his heart, he's like, hear that, Bobby? We can go fishing on the moon. Like, not for my generation, son, but you'll be going fishing on the moon one day. I'm like, yeah, if you can get around the moon bases we already have up there. It was probably some wastewater.
Oh, man.
Yeah, yeah. It's slowly being revealed. They can't hide it anymore.
Slowly being revealed.
The moon bases that have been there for decades are slowly being revealed. Oh, look, some water. We can live off the land.
So what are the clips I got there?
You got green testimony, pastor approved, and testimony something else.
So I'm watching like one of the, I believe this was on Fox, but this commercial has been floating around and I didn't catch the whole thing, but it's a funny commercial for a bunch of clean comics that are, and I just got the only reason I took this clip because I've never seen anything quite like it. There's a bunch of, it's Christian comics, which by the way, I've got nothing against, although personally from a that perspective, I think it's blasphemous. But I could be wrong.
So now you're talking about comic books?
No, comics. Comedians. Stand-ups.
Ah, okay. All right. Wait a minute. So they're clean? They're clean comics.
Well, they're clean, and they're mostly talking about church and going to church and the good Lord and all the rest of it.
Oh, boring.
But definition, it should be boring. But there's a couple of things in here that were worth discussing or at least listening to if you want to hit it.
Yeah, so this is pastor approved?
Yeah.
Yeah. What is this run on, John?
Fox and some of the Christian stations, as far as I can tell.
Okay. But wait, call with your credit card order and save $10. You'll get over 2 hours of nonstop laughter for only $19.99. Plus, each DVD features exclusive bonus material, including outtakes, sketches, and candid interviews.
How's your faith affected your comedy?
The anger and the rage and the cynicism is gone.
Heavenly Comedy Jam is not available in stores. Only Time Life can bring you this Comedy Club test. Pastor approved, one of a kind collection.
You believe in God.
So get both jam packed DVDs of Heavenly Comedy for just $19.99.
Well, God, that's my life. How'd I do?
Order now.
Okay. Call 1-800.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of things there. That one little thing in there sounded like you or me making fun of
it. I heard that, yeah.
That was actually a guy, one of the comics, doing something. Yeah, God, I believe in God.
Oh, God, how'd I do?
And that guy was different. But the one that was, the pastor approved is funny because why do you have, you know, is this okay, fine, you want to be that crazy? Yeah, pastor approved. But my favorite was the guy asking, so how's your faith affected your comedy? And the guy says, my anger, my rage, and my cynicism is all gone.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, wait a minute, that's why I go to see a comic. I'm looking for an angry. I mean, comics are generally mean spirited, and that's one of the, you know, they take again. Comedy is a form of aggression. So what's the point?
It must be successful, though. It must be working if they're running the spots on Fox continuously.
Well, they're not running it continuously. So I've only seen it once. But the what I think is interesting is Time Life doing it. You know, a giant mega corporation. You know, co-opting the religious movement. Good work.
And that kind of makes sense to me.
Oh, yeah, totally. Big religion, big mega churches, you know, Time Life, it all fits together.
I got one clip that I forgot to play during the swine flu minute from producer Billy in the UK, Gitmo Nation East. It's of Professor David Salisbury, director of the immunization program in Gitmo Nation East in the United Kingdom, on the popular Radio 4 consumer program, You and Yours. It's about an 18-minute interview, but he pulled a clip for us that I wanted to share. And it's about the hamburger helper of the vaccines, the adjuvants, which primarily is thimerosal, I believe, and other mercury.
No, well, thimerosal is a preservative. It's not the adjuvant.
Oh, the adjuvant is squalene.
Well, well, that's one of them. That's one of experimental adjuvants. The main one, I think, is sodium.
Right, but the whole point is the adjuvants actually make your immune system go into overdrive, so that the vaccine the effect
perks
up exactly. So I thought maybe interesting just to listen to what he has to say about adjuvants. You can only guess what his thoughts are.
So what's the situation about the H1N1 swine vaccine compared with seasonal? And it's slightly different in that it's a different strain, but strain changes don't matter.
Strain changes don't matter?
If they don't matter, I'm going to ask this question. I've asked it a million times on this show. Why don't they put the H1N1 in the regular seasonal flu if that's all it really is? And then have a mixture. Boom. One shot.
Thank you.
It's got a tiny dose compared with ordinary seasonal vaccine. The seasonal vaccine normally contains 45 micrograms, which is the measurement. This vaccine's got less than 4 micrograms. It's got a tiny, tiny dose. But it's also got in it an ingredient.
Wait a minute. He says I want to understand the measurements. He says 45 micrograms, and this has only 4 micrograms?
That's what he said.
A dose. But it's also got in it an ingredient that boosts the immune response. It allows you to use such a tiny dose. And that adjuvant that boosts your immune response is made of natural ingredients, vitamin E, which we all take in our diet and that some people take as vitamin supplements as well. And it's also got a naturally occurring fish oil that, again, we have in our diets. And these products are there for a good purpose.
Yes, they're good. For a good purpose.
Good purpose.
Yes,
I like
purpose.
That.
To kill you.
Well, let me mention another thing that I've noticed, which is another discrepancy. They keep coming up, but now the swine flu is made exactly the same as the seasonal flu. There's nothing to worry about. That's what the litany is here in the United States. Is this a lie? Are we at BS? Yeah, it seems to me that there's no two stories that are the same about this stuff. Does anybody find this a little suspicious?
Well, what I've understood is that, you know, part of the litany as well is it's been tested. It's safe. It's been tested. It's not a problem. But if you actually read the inserts, the package inserts, the labels, and the disclaimers from the 4 companies who have approved vaccines, what they're actually saying is that they are using the exact same process as the seasonal flu vaccine. Only one ingredient is different, namely the antigen, the actual virus. So our tests for seasonal flu show that this new vaccine is just as safe as that particular vaccine. So they haven't actually tested anything.
Yeah. And then of course I heard on something the other day, it was like, they said, well, you know, they never really test the seasonal flu vaccine either. So this is so the process is identical. So it's not anything to worry about.
Yeah. And in general, vaccines.
Thank God for that guy who shoots the vaccines into the wombat.
Yeah. But in general, there is no stringent FDA process for vaccinations, for vaccines. Not like drugs that are sold after you're sick, but before you're sick. It's like, okay, this is kind of the process. That's okay. They don't have to do a blind study where they have, people are given a, I'm fuzzy today, John. Well, yeah, the sugar shot.
A placebo.
Thank you.
Is the word you're looking for.
Yes. So people aren't, there's no placebo recipients in the test. So
yeah,
it's wonderful. It's a bonanza.
Well, you can't. Yeah, no, this is a dream come true. This is why the drug companies probably are slapping themselves in the forehead and saying, why didn't we think this earlier?
Well,
this is the way to make money.
Yeehaw.
All right, talking about a way to make money, if we're off the swine flu minute again.
We're off.
Somehow we got back on it. we keep putting this off. You have to talk about V.
Well, of course, I have not seen episode 2, and I will probably, maybe I'll see episode 3.
But you're not missing much.
No. Well, it's very interesting. So, of course, this is an age-old story as continuously propagated by David Icke that we stem from reptilians. And, of course, his story is a little bit different.
Well, wait, let's back up a minute. V, of course, is the new science fiction show.
Well, it's the new version of the science fiction show.
Right, V, which was done in the... Is this now on ABC? This was done, I believe, in the 70s or the 80s or the 70s?
80s, in the 80s. Now, V was in the 80s.
Did V, the show, precede Ike's theories, or was it after?
Oh, that's a really good question. But
well, I think David Icke saw V and said, "That's it."
No, because the original V series was more about visitors from another planet and not about the whole idea that the reptilians have actually been living amongst us for years and years. And so, what David Icke, who by the way was a respected journalist, I think he was a sports journalist as well, and he went on Terry Wogan one evening, and he said, of course, the planet is ruled by reptilians, and the entire royal family are all reptiles. And, his career ended abruptly. I got to tell you, I like David Icke. I buy into a lot of what he's talking about, but I've always had a little bit of trouble with the reptile stuff. And from time to time,
it does explain a lot, though. I mean, like, they live forever. These the royal family. Nobody ever dies prematurely.
They're all butt ugly.
But they all go to the max. They all go to the oldest. They get rid when one of the non-reptilians moves in with the family. They are murdered.
Yes,
and
I've seen pictures floating around the internet, you know, with absolute proof that Michelle and Barack Obama are reptilian. There's been some fun Photoshop work going around the internet when it comes to that. Mm. And of course, you know, the entire Bush family, etc., all reptilian. So this kind of plays on that vibe, and I guess metaphorically speaking, I kind of buy into it. Not actual reptilians, but that, you know, there is, you know, certainly a club of people that we're not in who really want to just rule the world no matter what. So they're not. If you cut away their skin, they may not actually be reptiles underneath. But there's something going on there. And I do understand though what you're saying about the parallels between the Obama administration, Obama as a cult of personality, and how you have Anna, who is the leader of the V's. And how kids are getting into it and spray painting V everywhere, and you know, it's beautiful when art imitates life.
Yeah, well,
I'll watch it. I got to watch a couple more episodes. I could hang out for a few more. Of course, you gave it to me without commercials, which is highly enjoyable. I don't know if I'll be able to sit through all the commercials once I actually have to watch the show in real time.
No, you put it on the DVR and you pound through the commercials like everybody else does.
How do those guys make money on television anymore?
Well, not everybody has a DVR pounding through the commercials, and once in a while you get stuck watching something in real time, which is nothing but annoying. You know, you used to be, like everybody knows, once they start practicing this, there's only 40 minutes of show in an hour, and it's 20 minutes of commercial. So essentially it's 2 minutes of show and a minute of commercial, which I think, by the way, they should pass a law, and I've said this before, they should pass a law that makes it so you have to run 2 minutes a show, 1 minute a commercial, 2 minutes a show, 1 minute a commercial throughout the hour, rather than ganging you up at the half hour point with like 10 minutes of commercials. Ugh.
I don't know if I could take the interruption, Johnny boy.
Yeah, I don't think anyone could, and that would destroy TV, which is my plan.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, so that's it. I thought you had a more
I don't. You know, I gotta say, I kind of like the show. I think, you know, Anna's kind of hot. You know, that was cool. And I like her. And
I thought that the first episode was way too much information. I thought that was very poorly paced. They come and they all have a meeting, a secret meeting that everybody knows about. And it's not much of a secret since the V's come in there and shoot up the place. And the guy that's the head of the meeting starts telling the whole story of the V's and how they've been here forever. And he just gives the whole backstory. So now there's no mystery to anything. It's just basically the plot structure is laid out for the listener or viewers right off the bat. So now there's nothing we don't know.
Well,
yeah, we know everything about the show. We know everything. John, there's not a trick in the book they
John,
can pull.
Do you have some illusion that the people who watch ABC primetime drama have intelligence?
I'm just telling
it
you.
It needs to be laid out to them. It's like, here's the story. And they'll do it again every single, the beginning of every episode. They'll rewind it and tell you the whole thing all over again. Just in case you're an idiot, here's how the storyline works. And then you just kind of float along with it and let that fill your brain while you watch the commercials. We all know that on television, the big joke is the programming is just there to fill up the time between the commercial advertisements.
So anyway, I wonder who's going to be advertising. I didn't pay much attention to who's advertising on the show, but I would assume a number of reptilian companies would be involved. You could probably make the connection between anyone who advertises on V and the fact that they're run by a reptilian. What do you think?
Totally. Now, of course, John and I spend a good amount of our time watching C-SPAN and other raw video feeds just to get the real deal, distill it, and pass it on to you. And there was an interesting question posed to the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, who, by the way, John, reptilian.
She, absolutely. And by the way, one of the I got a giveaway for you on the reptilian, how to spot them.
Okay.
And I noticed this because every time I see it, I keep one in the... And it's close to a pet peeve of mine. And you see different people. Like Bill Gates does it all the time. And it's always annoying. And what I always call it is the inappropriate smile. Somebody
yes,
be talking
yes,
along, blah,
yes,
blah, blah,
yeah,
blah,
yeah.
blah, 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 smile, blah, 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 smile.
Right. Yeah. That's because, the reptilians haven't quite figured out emotion yet. That's why. They're just like, okay, they know that from time to time humanoids throw a smile out there. They don't actually understand humor. Good observation.
Yeah, in fact, I was watching a bunch of hearings on the cap and trade, and this Chinese woman would do that. She was yakking away, very serious, and then just a smile in the middle of it. And then you go back to a serious mode. I was going, what the hell? What's that? Wow. But anyway, Bill Gates does it constantly.
So Nancy Pelosi guaranteed.
And Pelosi does too.
Yeah, guaranteed reptilian. So she's being hounded by a reporter from, I think, a local NBC affiliate. And he's saying, hey, look, you know, the way I read the healthcare bill, and by the way, I have read the first version, and I don't even have the new version yet. Where's the 1900-page version? I got to go read through that one now. So there's all these little gotchas in there. Instead of something very basic like, hey, why doesn't the government just pay for all your crap and then kumbaya? Right, and we'll tax you, and you'll have health insurance. Done. That would be simple. No, there's all this stuff in there that is extremely nefarious. And one of them, of course, is that the IRS will collect your penalty fee if you do not have health insurance. And it is now in there. It is a tax. So, you know, you just cannot deny that this is a tax. And if you don't pay your tax, I believe it is up to 5 years imprisonment and $250,000 in fines. And so this journalist is saying, hey, you know, what do you think, Speaker of the House, that, you know, you're actually going to throw people in jail if they don't want health coverage? How do you kind of, you know, how do you justify that? How does that work? And it's just a wonderful piece of reptilian avoidance. Have a listen to this. Oh, hold on a second. I'm sorry. I forgot to
cue it up.
No, I've queued it up. I got to set up the sound link. Hold on. It'll just take me a second. There we go. Here we go. No, it was totally queued up, dude. Here it comes.
Madam Speaker, I'm Shamari Stone from Como 4 News. I have a question for you that hasn't been pointed out, but a lot of Americans feel this way. Do you think it's fair to send people to jail for not buying health insurance?
Well, the point is that we want to make sure that everyone has access to health care. For a long time now, people who haven't had health care or provided it have placed the burden on others. Everybody is paying the price for uncompensated care. I don't need to tell you that in a hospital. And so what this is to say we all have to do our part, and that is the point of the bill.
But, Madam Speaker, I'm just trying to understand. If you don't buy health insurance, you go to jail?
Well,
you didn't answer my question.
I think the legislation is very fair in this respect. It gives people an opportunity.
It's totally fair. Don't pay, go to jail.
To have health care, access to quality health care. If they can't afford it, it provides subsidies for them to do so.
Yeah, so that's the interesting part about the can't afford it. It's like, that's pretty subjective if you can afford it or not.
Yeah,
it's true.
But do you think it's fair if somebody says, well, I'm just not going to have it, and if I get sick, then I'll just go to the emergency room and send the bill to you? That's my view on the subject. Yes, next.
Yes, and yeah. Smile, and next question. So she doesn't... I freeze the video, and she's sticking her tongue out. Total lizard move.
She gets some clips of the tongues. But yeah. Anyway, the... So, in other words, what she's saying is that somebody who doesn't have health insurance and goes to the emergency room and it costs a couple grand is bad, but sending someone to prison, which costs the taxpayers $40,000 a year minimum,
is
okay. Yeah. That's a good use of the public funds?
That's
interesting. I like the math. Hold on a second. Let me write this down.
How do I know you're not reptilian, John?
Because I don't have inappropriate smiles.
Yes. Oh, that's right. You have pretty much zero smiles.
No, I smile all the time. I'm a happy guy.
How about Hillary Clinton? Do you think she's reptilian?
Well, she does inappropriate smiles.
She does, doesn't she? And I wish I could find the soundbite for this, because she was in Manila. Now, she's on a huge tour. She's really rocking around with that inappropriate smile. And she was answering questions about the Moro Islamic Liberation Front during a town hall style gathering in Manila. And of course, there's an acronym for that. And here's the quote, which I wish I had audio for.
Oh, yeah, I know. This is a good one.
And if anyone has it, please send it to me. I'll play it over and over. I'm encouraged by what I hear about the progress and the peace efforts that are going on between the government and MILF. I would just love to have the audio of that. I looked all over. She has no idea what she's saying. But then I guess someone leaned over and went, Madam Secretary. And then she started saying, MILF. MILF. What a tool. I could imagine being Chelsea. Oh, geez. Oh, my God. Oh, my mom is such a dork. Poor kid.
Yeah. All right. So you want to switch gears here?
Yeah.
Let's go to cap and trade.
I looked some cap and trade stuff up, some history of it. And when it was acid rain, as you pointed out on a previous show, cap and trade actually was a pretty good idea. And it was implemented at the time. And this entire legislation is based on that premise of the acid rain from the 70s, I would say. But of course, there was some real capping going on because you put filters on your smokestacks.
And in fact, this clip addresses exactly this issue.
Ah, perfect setup.
By coincidence. This is Kenneth Green, who's with the American Enterprise Institute, and this is a long clip you're going to have to interrupt a few times, but it's so good and so concise, even though it's long, but it's actually short considering what he deals with. He introduces himself and then he starts getting into what a disaster cap and trade would be for the economy.
Mr. Berrigan, Dr. Green.
Chairman Baucus, Senator Grassley, members of the committee, thank you for inviting me to testify today on this timely and important topic. I am Kenneth Green, a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. I'm an environmental scientist by training, a policy analyst by avocation, and an economist by exposure. I have submitted...
I like that. I got to put that in my card. Economist by exposure.
To the record, two AEI policy studies on the issues before us today, which are part of the research base underlying what I'm about to say. I've spent the last 15 years analyzing public policy at think tanks in both the United States and Canada, with an emphasis on air pollution, climate change, and energy policy. Specifically, I have studied market-based mechanisms for dealing with pollution problems of all sorts, and I've studied cap-and-trade as it has made its appearance in conventional air pollution control, acid rain mitigation, and now in greenhouse gas control. What I can tell you based on my research is this. Cap-and-trade, the core of greenhouse gas control legislation today, is an inappropriate policy tool for the control of greenhouse gases that will cause significant economic harm, will kill and export jobs, and produce little or no environmental benefit.
All right. He needs a coffee break. Quick, take him, Michael, back. Yeah, let's get rid of that guy. Oh, no. What is he saying? They did not read the script, damn it.
Current legislation applies an emission trading model to an unsuitable pollutant. For emission trading to work, you need readily available technology to capture emissions or alternative sources of energy that can let some people generate emissions, surplus emissions, that can be sold to others. We had that with SO2. We don't have that with CO2.
And there's a fantastic video by two San Francisco lawyers who have worked for the EPA for 20 years, and they say exactly the same thing. I'll put that in the show notes as well at noagendashow.com. It's about that we don't have a solution. It works when you have, you know, an actual way to solve the problem, which, of course, this problem is not an actual problem. It's a made-up problem. Therefore, there's no real solution other than made-up solution.
With CO2, as EPA acknowledges, we're dependent on offsets to control costs, and offsets are notoriously slippery. Even the economists who first developed the theory and practice of cap and trade have said it's not a suitable mechanism for greenhouse gas control. Earth First agrees. And when you have that level of agreement from economists, Earth First, and people like myself at AEI, you're talking a serious consensus. Cap and trade hasn't worked in Europe, and it will not work here. By design, and despite provisions that try to hide this from the public, the carbon control bills now circulating will increase energy prices. That's what they're for.
In fact, that's been stated publicly, right, John? We've talked about that.
It's said in the back, though. I mean, he said it's
Even President Obama said, and we have the sound clip somewhere, he said, well, you know, it's basically gonna send electricity prices sky high, and it will bankrupt some utility companies. He said that publicly.
I don't remember that. But
oh,
okay.
I'll find it for you. Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is no secret. It's just, I mean, let's be honest, Balloon Boy is a lot more compelling.
Slowing economic growth, killing jobs, and reducing competitiveness. And this is a one-way street. Since cap and trade doesn't only cap emissions, it caps economic growth. When GDP goes up, energy price consumption does also, as does carbon permit prices, choking off continued growth. The tighter the emission cap, the tighter the economic straitjacket. As energy prices rise and as American companies find themselves less competitive, businesses and jobs will flow to countries without greenhouse gas controls and with stringent environmental controls.
Which is exactly the way it's set up. The whole cap and trade system is not only do we let developing nations and other countries just go ahead and poop out whatever they want to, we actually pay them. We're going to send them money. Hey, good job. We're going to pay them money for that. And we're going to send them our technology as well. This is all what's coming down in Copenhagen. This is the global law we're going to the treaty we're going to sign.
Of any kind, without stringent controls, potentially allowing emissions to increase. The remedy to this, border tax adjustments, is only likely to cause a trade war, further damaging the U.S. economy. As increased energy costs raise the cost of U.S. goods and services, consumption will decline, causing still more job losses across the American economy. Legislation now before Congress will cause regional and sectoral winners and losers, will unjustly redistribute and export wealth from industrial coal-powered states to states with greater hydro, nuclear, and natural gas resources. It will send taxpayer dollars abroad to countries that are economic competitors and sometimes geopolitical adversaries. Perversely, low-carbon fuel standards might actually prohibit oil imports from our number one foreign supplier, our neighbor to the north, Canada.
Yes, thank you. He finally says it. Could we please hear that one more time? I said this last night. I was on thin ice. I was really holding back with my family. I love my family so much.
Are they a bunch of left wingers?
No, actually, of course, Uncle Don, he worked for Bush Sr. I mean, he was a registered Republican. He actually registered Democrat. He's changed. But I said, FYI, when President Obama says we need to stop our dependence on foreign oil, I'm always thinking, hey, Canada, how are you feeling? No one seems to realize that 80% of oil, isn't it 80%? It's a huge number.
It's some huge number.
Yeah, it comes from Canada.
From Alberta.
It comes from Canada. Yeah. So, my God, I wish people would actually listen to this kind of stuff. We need 400 million people listening, John, not 400,000.
Perversely, low-carbon fuel standards might actually prohibit oil imports from our number one foreign supplier, our neighbor to the north, Canada.
Yeah, those damn bastards, we've got to stop our dependence on them.
Cap and trade creates a new, poorly understood financial instrument that can be used to leverage debt, potentially creating a massive carbon bubble that bursts once it becomes clear we can't afford to maintain the regime.
Oh, beautiful. Exactly what we've said here. It's a new derivative. It'll be a new way to create debt, which is how money is created in the financial system, which is beautiful. These guys are chomping at the bit. They can't wait. What else can we do? Now, we've already done houses. We've screwed that up. I know. Air. This is a good one.
The air we
Let's
breathe.
Let's make money off of air. Fantastic.
Finally, cap and trade, and all carbon control for that matter, puts a bounty on ecosystems. As carbon control favors biofuels, more ecosystem will be planted over and farmland used to grow fuel instead of food. A recent article in Science observes that attempting to limit CO2 concentrations to 450 parts per million, the currently stated goal of carbon controls, would cause bioenergy crops to expand to displace virtually all of the world's natural forests and savannas by 2065 and actually increase global greenhouse gas emissions.
Now, see, this is where the guy loses it, because I'm like, 2065? I don't give a crap.
Well, I know, but all the people that are pushing the global warming agenda keep pushing everything out to 2100. So I don't think it's unrealistic to throw this in their face.
Oy.
As for the claim that the green energy provisions of current legislation will create green jobs that can't be exported, this is simply not true. As I testified before another Senate committee, governments do not create jobs. They simply move them from one place to the other, inevitably, with a net loss of jobs on, with less jobs on net.
Hey, who is this guy again, John?
This is Kenneth Green, and I, by the way, I love his last name.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, nothing subtle there. He if I could make a recommendation, he should not climb the stairs at the UN building in Vienna. This would be a very bad place for him to be. He might slip and fall down 17 stories.
Economists have known this for over 150 years. Europe has seen much of its green industry exported, and the U.S. is already seeing solar cell and windmill production being moved to China. The only thing worse than no energy policy is bad energy policy, and that's what S-1733 and approaches like it represent. Bad energy policy wrapped up in misleading terminology that hides the true nature of the legislation. Thank you for allowing me to speak to you today on this timely and important issue. I look forward to your questions.
Yeah, nice knowing you. Nice knowing you, Professor Green. Nice knowing you, bud. Wow. Yeah, that's really good. That's really good. But, you know, you have to distill that down into one soundbite for the general populace to get
it. Oh, yeah. No one wants to listen to a four-minute spiel.
No. Oh, no. It's wait. And we should have interrupted that with commercials at least twice, according to your formula.
Yeah.
No.
Right.
No.
Yeah, two commercials would have been in there.
Here's the scam. I just got to say it one more time. Al Gore, who, of course, really was the catalyst for a lot of this first global warming, now climate change, which, of course, is actually a political joke because, you know, we're moving into one world government. That's the actual climate change, the climate of the world's political scene. He is owner and investor, $5 billion fund in the largest cap and trade system on Earth. And when you own the NASDAQ or when you own the exchanges, that's where the real money is. You know, you own the market, and it's all. And this guy's so right. It's all about the. It's going to be sold as a derivative, and then you can start to hedge against it. You can hedge against anything, and this is going to be. It's going to be huge, and I think it's just going to pass, John. It's just going to flow right through, and you know, people will be too afraid to really go against it. And they don't understand it, and they don't want to be seen as unpopular because they're against saving the world. Meanwhile, oil is up to $80.
Yeah.
That kind of slipped up there. And there was a great great article on SeekingAlpha.com that says that the global oil scam is actually $2.5 trillion. I did not realize that the ICE, that's the Online Commodities and Futures Exchange, another one of these exchanges where basically oil futures are traded, that is a so-called dark pool. So it's an unregulated exchange. You know,
they're trying to crack down on these, but it just seems that we're not doing a very good job.
Well,
the guy who used to be this guy Greenberger, and I had to figure out what happened to him. I mean, he was the biggest complainer, and Soros was also complaining about this, and both of them have been squelched for some reason. I think somebody just said, here, how big a check do you want us to write?
Yeah, or here, look at this.
Yeah, look at this.
Look at this, dude.
See this?
See this? Hey, Sonny boy. So this is the Intercontinental Exchange, which is founded, owned, and operated by Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, British Petroleum, Total, Shell, Deutsche Bank, and Societe Generale. So it's like, you know, these guys, they got a little, they're like trading marbles amongst themselves.
You got a lot of marbles.
It's a beautiful game. And so the way it works is one of these guys will, you know, so Goldman will go like, hey, man, give me 100,000 barrels of oil. And Morgan will sell it to him. But then, you know, Morgan will then sell it off to BP, and BP will sell it back to Goldman Sachs. So they're basically just ticking. And by the way, during the dot-com bubble, this was a very well-known scam. You'd hire a marketing consultant who would be paid in warrants, i.e. that's not really options, it's not really stock, and he'd get a bunch of his friends, and they'd just kind of sell the stock back, you know, because they trust each other. They'd sell it in a circle, right? So it'd be he'd sell it to guy B, B to C, C back to A. And while doing that, the price just keeps rising because, you know, what you really need on any type of exchange is liquidity, meaning that there's stuff moving. You know, that's how supply and demand, the illusion of supply and demand is created. So that's how they're ticking up the price of oil futures, just by moving it around amongst themselves. And, you know, and maybe it's not just selling the oil back. Maybe there's some pork bellies that come back on the back end. It's all one big game. And once again, we're not in it.
This is a fact. So we got one more shorter clip. This is another woman testifying before the same committee on the cap and trade, who I had to cut most of. She's a little more boring, but she made a couple different points that because she was she had a lot of metrics as opposed to generalities, and it was kind of interesting. So you might want to play the last clip.
Input-output models, which some organizations.
Now, what was this? This was C-SPAN that you were watching?
Yeah, C-SPAN. This woman is with her name is Margot Thorning, and she's with the American Council for Capital Formation. You know, there's so many of these organizations
now. I'm surprised. Think tanks.
Yeah, they're think tanks.
So is she, don't even tell me. I'll listen.
Views are static models. They're not able to capture the dynamic impacts of changes in energy prices. I'd like to share with you briefly the results of a study that the ACCF and the National Association of Manufacturers sponsored, examining the impact of the Waxman-Markey bill. We used a macroeconomic model, the same model that the Department of Energy uses, the NEMS model. Our study showed that for the U.S. as a whole, by 2030, the Waxman-Markey bill would reduce gross domestic product relative to the baseline forecast between 1.7% and 2.4%.
You know, so this it kills me because first of all, she used the exact same model as the government used, and of course, you know, damn lies and statistics. And what she's saying is, hey, you know, what she should say is, you're going to get screwed, people. You're going to get totally screwed. But instead, she went,
well, that's what, you know, that's what these meetings are supposed to be like. And it's up to the media.
Yeah. Media. Oh, like journalists and stuff.
To take a look at what she says and then report it in a way that the public can understand.
Ah,
but
that's the job.
They don't even go to these meetings.
They don't even turn on C-SPAN. They could sit at home in their Snuggie, petting their Obama chia.
2.4% of GDP may not sound like much, but it's about $600 billion. That's about what we're paying Social Security recipients right now. Job growth would be slowed. We did show that we'd pick up new green jobs. Certainly we will because of the provisions of the Waxman-Markey bill. But on balance, we lose between 1.7 and 2.4 million jobs in the year 2030. Household income is about $1,200 less than it otherwise would be. Some of the input-output studies that are out there show job growth. But again, as they admit, as the Center for American Progress study admits, they are not dynamic. They're not able to capture the impact of higher energy prices on the U.S. economy.
Does NPR go to these meetings? Do they have C-SPAN in the office?
I doubt it.
Does NPR
probably see it as a competitor?
Certainly is boring.
Well, it's definitely the boredom factor is like a toss-up between these two. But the fact of the matter is what she's doing is she's taking a look at things from a mathematical perspective.
From the numbers. She's getting the actual numbers and running this exact same test and saying, huh.
This sucks is what she's determining. And this is the kind of thing that we try to do on this show. But, you know, I don't understand why everybody's not doing this.
Because no one cares.
I mean, they got the bubble the guy in the balloon. They got the other crap.
I was in the cab in New York, and they have that, you know, god-awful ABC News produced cab news thing, whatever it is. And
God. I turned that thing off.
I forced myself. And so they had a report on the balloon boy family, and of course, you know, now they're copping to some of the allegations that they actually did lie, and they were just trying to hype up the reality show, whatever. And they cut back to the anchors, and then the anchorman says, "And the worst thing is, they get to keep their kids." I'm like, "What? What? You would rather put children in the system?" Then leave them with. So their parents messed up. You know, they tried to make a buck. But you, like, the worst thing is they get to keep the kids. Well, why don't you take the kids, you douche? I mean, it was unbelievable, unbelievable. But yeah, you're right, John. There's no one doing this apparently, which is why this program is nominated for not one but two podcast awards. Very proud of the People's Choice Award, and of course, in the general category, which I hear is going to be the hot one at the Oscars this year, is because we do bring you this news. We spend the time and we split it up. You know, I was busy with the family. I was trying to hook us up with one of the terrorists of the world. I'm trying to get us in, and we're actually going to influence public policy in North Korea. By sending fantastic DVDs with hidden messages, subliminal cuts to King Jong Il. And John, on the other hand, is forcing himself to watch C-SPAN. And the only way we can continue to do this is with your support.
Yes, and we didn't get much after the last show, I might add. And I'm trying to deconstruct the reasons.
I got messages, best show ever, loved it, fantastic, you guys were on a roll. And what do we get? Bupkis.
We didn't get much. We got four donors that gave over $50, and the highest was obviously Stephen Shear, our executive producer, for $90. The other ones are Jordan Wyatt, who's our in-house vegan, who gives us money every so often. He's giving
vegan in residence, John.
He's sent $50 in from Southland, New Zealand, in honor of oatmeal.
Oh, that's bad. Yeah, oatmeal, of course.
Crash the dead pigeon.
Yeah. No. The pigeon who is no longer with us.
Norman Lorraine Edmonton gave us $50, and James Briscoe, who's given us money before, so, you know, and he said we have to plug something called Police Knots, which is some, I don't know what it is.
With a K?
He sends it. It's some new show or some.
Police Knots. Okay.
Yeah, and his donation was $55.30, which had something to do with it. And he's in Bayshore, New York. And that was it. That's all we got. And so people out there who have not...
That's demoralizing. And all we need is...
We're never going to do three shows a week at this rate, because every time we do well...
Yeah, then we get nothing.
Right. So essentially, we can't do well, which means we can't do three shows a week. So it's
our listeners have put it's a conundrum. We have to suck in order to be able to do three shows a week. I don't get you guys. If every single one of our listeners gave us $5 a year, forget about the $5 a month plan, $5 a year, we would be set. We could do it all day long. We could be deconstructing, watching C-SPAN, having no life.
And then we have to, kind of thankful. So anyway, we don't need any notes from people who say we suck.
No, because we know we suck when the donations are rolling in. Okay. You don't have to tell us. We know when we really suck, because then things are actually going well.
So go to noagendashow.com .org/NA and help us out, because we didn't get much of this last round. Now, that said, I heard that the iTunes feed was screwed up somewhere.
Again?
I don't think it's screwed up.
No, I think it's working. Right. I have three
people. Make sure to report to us when you have problems getting the show.
Yeah, so we can ignore it. Perfect. Noagendashow.com or Dvorak.org/NA. And if you feel like, just empty your PayPal account. You're not using it anyway. Just send whatever's left.
Yeah, I didn't notice anybody emptying their PayPal account this week.
Hey, John, and Adam writes, Richard Leisure, I'm a starving college student at the University of Arkansas. We have the world's leading RFID lab and are taught that RFID is awesome. I agree that RFID is great for tracking inventory and raw materials. However, I'm completely against the use of RFID in passports and humans. People are just not inventory. Now I have a question about producer spots. I can't afford to donate, but email you guys regularly. Can we still use No Agenda on our resumes? Maybe just as producers. Might be an interesting thought to bring up. And I was thinking, maybe we should do something, because there are a lot of people who continue to donate smaller amounts, who are on the No Agenda Night Layaway program, and perhaps just on the $5 a month subscription. We probably should do something, John, so that they can still put it on their resume as like an associate producer. There should be some credit we can give.
Yeah, associate producer's fine. I think that would be good. Yeah, let's go with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So okay. You are now allowed to use yourself as an associate producer to give yourself that credit. And if you need us to vouch, just drop us an email. We'll take care of it.
And we don't have a problem with this. And by the way, my son was talking about, he graduated from Evergreen.
No, which is like the top school in the country.
It's one of the more interesting schools. He says that once you get your degree, he says they'll vouch for just about anything you tell them to vouch for.
Really?
Which is kind of our policy. He says, so if, for example, you wanted to get a job as an environmental consultant with the EPA, you could just say, my specialty at Evergreen was environmental consulting.
Oh, really? I love it.
And when they send a note in, the Evergreen guys just sign off on it. Okay.
So Craig D. in the chat room says, I have no problem with these guys begging for money. I just can't donate to them when I see people that actually need the money. Hey, buddy, we actually need the money.
We actually need the money.
So I picked up...
We're supposed to, according to that communist, people are supposed to just give away everything because there's somebody else that's more needy. Which not, like what? Like PBS? Yeah. Well, we should go play that clip again.
Oh, I got it. Sure, let's play the PBS clip of how they take these donations or underwriters.
Okay, move it on to money.
This, by the way, is the chairwoman of NPR, the station that is not supposed, or the network that is not supposed to be influenced at all by outside sources, particularly not those giving money to them.
How are NPR's corporate underwriting revenues holding up in the recession? And what about foundation grants?
Two different stories. Underwriting is down. It's down for everybody. I mean, this is the area that is most down for us. Is in sponsorship, underwriting, advertising. Call it whatever you want.
Sponsorship, underwriting, advertising. Call it whatever you want. How about we call it crooked? Let me try that one on you. Crooked. So I'm reading, I didn't have to read it. I'm looking at the Financial Times Weekend Edition, which is the only newspaper I actually buy because I think they're kind of, the CIA reads this thing. So I'm like, all right, this is where they get their info from. We might as well get it from there as well. So here's the new meme. They put on the front page, and I wish I had a copy to show you, John, Khaled Sheikh Mohammed. Now, there's a big brouhaha here on the east coast of Gitmo Nation that they are bringing the terrorists behind the September 11 attacks 2001 to New York to be tried. Of course, they need to get them out of Gitmo, Guantanamo Bay, in order to close the base, which was President Obama's first promise, which he won't be able to keep it by the end of the year, but they will eventually. So they want to bring this guy to New York to try him in New York. And we're all up in arms about it. But this is, of course, really just to distract your attention from the fact that the guy who was supposed to be behind it is Osama bin Laden. And when you look at this picture, so you've probably seen the picture of the capture picture of Khaled Sheikh Mohammed, where he's in like a torn t-shirt and he's all sweaty.
Yeah, the underwear shot.
So this is a shot of him in full garb with his full beard nicely groomed. He looks exactly like Osama bin Laden. In fact, if you showed me, if I take this out on the street and I say, who is this? anyone will say, oh, that's Osama. In fact, I'm going to do that. I'm going to take a camera, take this on the street and say, who's this picture of? People will say, oh, that's Osama bin Laden. But it's not. It says the caption right underneath, Khaled Sheikh Mohammed accused of being behind the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001. What happened to Osama bin Laden? I don't get it. Because we couldn't find him, because we have 200,000 troops in Afghanistan, couldn't smoke the guy out of his cave. Now we have to blame it on this guy, and now he's going to be the guy? This is a total scam.
That's pretty good.
It's shocking because I picked up the paper. I'm like, hey, Osama bin Laden on the front. I'm like, no, wait a minute. It's Khaled Sheikh Mohammed. Only this is his high school yearbook picture, and he looks really nice. And you know, and you look at the guy. Oh my God! So they've just switched it. It's like don't think about Osama bin Laden. No.
Nothing to see
don't
here.
Don't look over here.
Nothing to see here.
Ooh, look at that!
So you're being scammed, but it's working. Oh boy, it's working.
America, wake up!
Yeah,
America.
We got to pull that clip.
Yeah, I know. America, wake up.
And then I have been predicting this would happen. I have been telling you that this was bad news. No one wanted to listen to me. I told you this Large Hadron Collider up there in Switzerland. I said, it's a bad idea. You don't be want to try to recreate the Big Bang. This is not a good idea to be throwing protons around at the speed of light. This is not a good idea. So what happens? They shot off a gravitational wave, also known as a time wave, because they fired this thing up on November 1st. Of course, that was not in the news because they don't actually want you to know what's going on with this billion-dollar project. And it blew out all the lights in South America. I don't know if you caught that. But seriously, 70 million people were without power. And the way it works, John, is fascinating. I'm really studying on
this.
Well,
before you say that, you know what the word is on that power outage, right?
No,
you know how they explained
it. No, I know what happened, but go ahead. Oh, yeah, it was a storm.
No, I heard a different story.
Oh, I've got the...
Super hackers.
Super what?
Super hackers.
Oh, that would be good.
They've hacked the grid down there, and they're just showing off. It's like a Schmersh or some James Bond group.
I'm looking at the AFP report, Agence France-Presse.
Oh, the French, though. We already know that they won't take the shot.
Yeah, so they say... atmospheric storm, atmospheric discharges, very strong wind and rain. So apparently the grid can't handle wind and rain in South America.
Yeah, because it never rains down there.
So first of all, we know there's a lot of weird stuff going on with the polar the magnetism of the poles changing, and planes are going down in the southern hemisphere. Of course, Airbuses mainly, because they're so over-automated. But what is happening is you have these gateways to the sun. These are in fact, there's a couple of very famous ones in South America, mainly Chile, Bolivia, Paraguay, Brazil, Argentina. And these things react to certain types of gravitational waves, which, of course, when you're flinging magnets around at the speed of light, you can only imagine that maybe you create some kind of gravitational pull. And it's basically shocking the Earth. The Earth being made, one of the most common, well, people don't know this, one of the most, listen to me now, one of the most common substances on Earth is silicon, right? Would you agree?
It's a lot of it. Yeah, it's called sand.
Yeah, sand, silicon. There's like 25% of the Earth's crust is made of silicon. It's highly conductive, okay? So, and in fact, we're using it. You're listening to sand. Okay. We're pounding sand right now. It's all sand based. And when you're under the Earth's crust and you're putting gravitational shit into sand, it has absolute effects. So they had to shut the thing down because it started to overheat. And they said, oh, a bird pooped in the machine. Literally, that's the report. Oh, a bird pooped on some piece of the machine. So we had to shut it down.
No, I dropped a baguette, supposedly.
Yeah, a baguette. Well, meanwhile, 70 million people without electricity. I'm telling you, this is the Large Hadron Collider. It's bad news. It should not be allowed to operate. I'm against it.
Well, for one thing, silicon's not conductive, A. which is kind of...
It, what do you mean? Of course it's...
Of
course...
That's why it's used as the basis for semiconductor products, which have, like, circuits going on. If it was conductive, it would just short out. Doesn't make any sense. Okay, so let's just go with... How is it conductive?
You need to read up on Tesla, my friend. You need to really understand how the Earth crust works.
This is all total crackpot stuff. Now,
Fine. Hey, John.
What's that?
Hey, John, look over here.
Go ahead, call
it crackpot stuff. Let me put it this way. They want me to get out of the room. Hold on. Yeah, we're checking out in a few minutes. Thank you.
I thought this was one of your sound effects. No. Crackpot calling the kettle black.
Hey, we got to go. The show has got to end. I'm being kicked out of the room. We have what to stop. It's 12 o'clock over here. I got to stop. Yeah, I'm going to play.
I'm going to play the end tune.
What? No. Yeah. I got to go. It's the end of the show.
We'll continue this discussion next week.
We'll talk about it on Thursday. We definitely have stuff to talk about, and I suggest you do some research, John, on how silicon is used, because just because you're a tech journalist doesn't mean you know everything.
I don't know anything, but it would help if we had more money. So please go to noagendashow.com and give us a hand.
Yeah, that would actually be very, very helpful. So coming to you from the short stay La Quinta Crackpot Command Center in upstate New York in Armonk, where we're being kicked out under eminent domain of removal of our physical bodies, I'm Adam Curry.
And from northern Silicon Valley, where the sun is shining, I'm John C. Dvorak.
We'll be back with you, and we'll bring you another jam-packed hour and a half of entertainment, uninterrupted by commercials, if you give us some money, on Thursday on No Agenda.